Chapter 1. Where I Come From. This nation has always struggled with how it was going to deal with poor people and people of color. We've had the war on poverty that never really got into waging a real war on poverty. Maxine Waters. The sounds were what got to me. My father shouting, "I'll kill your ass!" My mother shrieking, the sickening thump of flesh hitting flesh, hard. I had been playing board games, probably Operation or something like that, with three of my sisters in the bedroom I shared with my youngest brother Ray. He was three, too young to play. But I was watching him, keeping him out of trouble. The fierce Miami sun was setting, and we could tell the fighting was getting worse because my parents had moved from their bedroom, where they tried to keep things private, into the living room, where anything went. It was a Friday or Saturday night, and I was 6 years old. Soon we could hear large objects being thrown against the walls, glass shattering, long piercing screams. I had known it was going to be a bad night when my oldest sister, Jackie, left to go home. Then 13, Jackie was the child of my mother's previous partner, born when my mother was 18, before my parents had met and gotten married. She lived with Grandmama, as we called our maternal grandmother. But during her frequent visits with us, she was sometimes able to prevent my parents from attacking each other. Not this time. Maybe she had sensed what was coming. It was worse than ever. Even worse than some of the other times when the neighbors had called the police. In 1972, long before Farrah Fawcett's The Burning Bed and O.J. and Nicole, the courts were reluctant to prosecute domestic violence cases, in part because they didn't want to incarcerate the family's primary wage earner, which might have left the wife and children destitute. As a result, domestic violence was a tolerated behavior and was not limited to black families. The police would eventually come and they would talk to my father. Sometimes they would tell him to go away for a bit to cool off, but they never arrested him. They saw it as private, something between a man and his woman. I felt relieved when they broke things up, but I didn't understand why the fights never stopped. My sisters whispered to each other for a split second, then took the youngest ones by the hand and pulled us through the living room into the yard. Patricia, then 9 years old, stayed behind. She often tried to play peacemaker like her big sister Jackie. The terrifying screams and crashes continued. 10-year-old Beverly and 7-year-old Joyce tried to get me out as quickly as possible, but I still saw my father hit my mother with a hammer. The glass coffee table that was usually in front of the couch was shattered. Shards of glass were everywhere. The ceramic lion that I once got grounded for accidentally dropping wielded its claws an empty menace by the front door. I froze, but my sisters dragged me along. The poster-sized photos of Martin Luther King and JFK on the living room wall looked dead in their frames. As we ran out, I looked back to see my mother collapse, bleeding, at the door that opened from the living room into the yard. What I remember most is horror. The memories themselves are disjointed, as if reflected in the splintered glass. "My mama's dead!" one of the girls screamed. "My mama's dead! The car done killed my mama," another sister said. In my family, we never called our father Dad or Daddy, just used his first name, for reasons now lost to family history.
"Carl done caught her in the head with a hammer,"
Beverly, my third oldest sister, shrieked. Someone, probably our next door neighbor who'd made those types of calls before, dialed 911. An ambulance arrived and took my mother away to the hospital. At some point, her father, whom we called Pop, came to collect us and took us to our maternal grandmother's house. But no one told me how my mother was or anything about what was going on, and it didn't occur to me to ask. In our family, you didn't really raise those kinds of questions.